Greetings. I'm Bill Tyke, and I'd like to welcome you to today's edition of Living Baltimore. Today we have our second show with Katie Curran O'Malley, who's Executive Director of the Women's Law Center of Maryland. And Katie's here today to talk to us about more important information about women's rights. So, Katie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be back again, Bill.
First of all, for those of our listeners who did not catch the last show, could you tell us a little bit about the Women's Law Center?
Sure, I'm happy to. So the Women's Law Center of Maryland is 53 years old. We were incorporated as a 501c3 back in 1973. And, you know, it started as an organization of young law students and attorneys who were really just discouraged by the outcomes that women would face going to court when they were dealing with issues involving financial independence, when it dealt with custody and divorce cases, as well as pregnancy discrimination. So they began saying, you know, we're going to start taking on some of the cases and working on pro bono to make sure that women are getting, you know, getting a fair share when it comes to economic issues, when it comes to divorce and custody, and when it comes to bodily autonomy. So, you know, our mission is to ensure physical safety, economic security, and bodily autonomy. So that means that we advocate through the legislature, but we also provide direct legal services in six different courthouses and do two hotlines across the state, one for family law and one for employment law.
Great. How can someone find out more information?
So you can reach out to our website, which is www.wlcmd.org, and you can, you know, find about our services, the direct legal services that we provide there, which incorporate legal and supportive services to victims from intimate partner violence seeking protective orders, as well as people who are survivors of intimate partner violence who are looking for custody and divorce, landlord-tenant matters as well. We also have the two hotlines, the employment law hotline and the family law hotline, that offer help for individuals who are either attempting to find attorneys or legal services when dealing with family law and or employment discrimination issues.
Let's talk about the hotlines. The first one you mentioned is the family law hotline.
Yes. We have three part-time employees, and the family law hotline is, again, every day. It's free statewide services staffed by very experienced family law attorneys, and they provide advice and give referrals for basic family law questions. That operates weekdays from 9:30 in the morning to 4:30 p.m. And our employment law hotline is, you know, answers calls from people who are working in Maryland about different employment matters, whether it's discrimination in the workplace, sexual harassment, family or medical leave, unpaid wages, you know, contractual disputes they might be happening. And the employment law hotline operates every Tuesday from 9:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. and the first Thursday of each month from 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. And all of that information is included on the website as well.
Great. Is there a separate number for the family law hotline?
The two hotline numbers, actually, I didn't bring them in with me, but they're on the website.
Okay. Great. So that'd be WLCMD.org.
Yes. And our phone number to the Women's Law Center, if for some reason your internet services are not working, is 410-321-8761.
Okay, great. Thank you. I know that a big part of your work is working with immigrants.
Correct. Well, our program is called the MADOVI program, which stands for Multi-Ethnic Domestic Violence Project. And that project deals with foreign-born survivors of intimate partner violence. And the MADOVI attorneys, we have one attorney and a legal advocate. They help determine whether a victim's eligible for legal status here in the United States, as well as related benefits, including, you know, work authorization. They also assist them with safety planning and referrals to other community resources. It assists victims also applying for legal status without relying on their abuser, you know, because obviously they are held captive from the abuser. So being able to separate from the abuser and access legal status without having to rely on them, because that could be literally impossible.
Right. Could you give us some, without violating, of course, confidentiality, give us, please, some examples of some recent cases, recent problems?
So, you know, we handle on a pretty much a daily basis, we service about 5,000 plus clients a year. And whether it's in our protective order advocacy program or the collateral legal assistance program for divorce, custody, and whatnot, or through the Madovi program, we basically are achieving for our clients a way to be safe from physical violence from their abusers. So for the protective orders, which I handle as well, we go to the court and we seek for, you know, the survivor to have no contact order from the abuser. Sometimes that means the abuser has to vacate the home that they both might be living in. There can be, the court can address in a protective order related matters such as visitation, custody, emergency family maintenance, temporary use and possession of a home, temporary use and possession of a vehicle. And then there's like a little box called other that a court could check, say if there's issues with passports or, you know, a survivor not having access to keys to the car or to keys to the home. Details like that that keep, you know, that might be an issue between the parties. So we deal with those protective orders pretty much on a weekly basis, and then certainly custody and divorce cases throughout Baltimore County and Carroll County, actually throughout the state. We take cases in the city as well as Anne Arundel. So, you know, we handle custody and divorce matters, which take longer than the protective orders. The protective orders come in pretty quickly, and then certainly a divorce and custody case can linger on for months and years. Our immigration work can certainly take many years. And we have about 300-plus clients in that program now, helping them apply for U visas and T visas so that they can get, you know, the ability to work in the country to economically survive without the abuser. So those cases are obviously very daunting as well. We also do legislative advocacy. So when the session starts, which will be very soon, we will be back down in Annapolis, and, you know, the Women's Law Center of Maryland has, I believe, a really good reputation based on the prior executive directors that we've had down there testifying on really important bills dealing with reproductive health rights, employment rights, criminal laws that talk about physical safety and domestic violence issues within the different statutes. So we've been fortunate to have that reputation, and we will be going back to the legislature when they begin to, you know, fight on these different issues in the future.
Right. What are the center's priorities this year?
So, you know, ever since Dobbs happened, we've been very active. My predecessor, Michelle Seary, who was the executive director, was really instrumental with our lobbyist, Robin Elliott, to get the reproductive rights package passed in 2023. Senator Arianna Kelly was a senator from Montgomery County that sponsored many of those bills. And, you know, after Dobbs, we were able to get the legislation so that we could have the ballot initiative that was just voted on here in Maryland passed. That passed by, golly, it was 75%.
Yeah, that's great.
So we were very, very fortunate. And there was also shielding bills that were proposed during that 2023 session as well. Those shielding bills were in order to protect women and girls from other states who were coming here in Maryland and using reproductive health care services here in Maryland without having those health care records subpoenaed by states that penalize and criminalize girls and women for accessing reproductive health care. So those bills, again, were very, very important and instrumental, and having those implemented is really an important issue that we want to see come forward. Last year, we were able to get a gender-affirming care bill passed as well, which was important. And then last session, we also were instrumental in lobbying with MCASA, the Maryland Coalition Against Sexual Assault, and Maryland Network Against Domestic Violence, as well as other agencies, to get the consent law changed in Maryland when it refers to sex offenses. So we used to be, for certain sex offenses, you would have to show force or threat of force in order to show that somebody was not consenting to a sexual act. And that is no longer a requirement. Now what the courts, what the law will require is that the court look at a totality of the circumstances when looking to determine whether or not somebody did or did not consent to a sexual act. And so that was
a lot more realistic.
Yeah, it really was. You know, it allows certain facts to be considering when determining whether there was a lack of consent for, like I said, certain sexual crimes. And it's based on the totality of circumstances, like the words and the conduct of the victim and the defendant. So it was a huge push. It took many years, but we were able to get that through.
How is Maryland regarding these things nationally?
So Maryland had a law that required that you would have to show force or threat of force when there was a non-consensual sexual act. So, you know, we already have non-consent for certain ages. You can't, you know, there can't be consent when having sex with a minor, and there can't be consent if someone is completely incapacitated based on drugs or alcohol. But in other circumstances, say you are, we had a really awful situation where there was a Frederick County physician, who was seeing a patient who was over 18. She was an adult. She went to her pediatrician, because you can still do that with your health insurance. And she had an illness that was like, you know, I want to say perhaps, you know, a virus of some sort or congestion. And he ended up digitally penetrating her. And there was no force or threat of force, but she certainly didn't consent to that, and she felt totally powerless in that act. And so that couldn't be a second-degree sex offense. That had to be a fourth-degree sex offense, which clearly it was not. There's other different circumstances where there's no force or threat of force, but there is a power dynamic between the parties that can alter whether or not someone consents. We had, I believe, our Maryland AG just presented some cases against a landlord who was using his stature as the landlord to force women to have sex with him. It's either you have sex with me or you're homeless. And so that was, they pursued that through a civil rights violation. But that would be another case where, you know, there's no force or threat of force, but certainly the fear of being homeless can be really daunting for people, as you can imagine, especially if you, not only if you don't have children, but if you do have children as well. You know, those types of things were happening, and now our law takes into consideration when determining whether or not someone has consented to a sexual act, taking into consideration the totality of the circumstances and not whether or not somebody had a gun or a firearm or was threatening physical harm in order to get the person to submit to sex.
Yeah. It's a step forward for Maryland.
Yeah, it really is. We have a pretty progressive state. I'm very proud of our state.
That's great. What can our listeners do to help?
Well, you know, we at the Women's Law Center are going to be like a lot of nonprofits that are going to be losing our federal funding due to COVID-19 funding, you know, that was given to us during the pandemic, which, of course, we were very grateful for. So in our upcoming FY26, we will be losing a good source of that funding. So part of my job as the executive director is to talk about the great work that our lawyers do here and to talk about the great work that we're able to do for our clients in helping them live in a violent-free world where they can provide for themselves and their families and they can make their own determinations about reproductive health care. So we need money to do that, and donations are certainly welcome and can be, again, accessed through looking at our website, and you know, we have a donate button, contacting us and seeing if there are ways to help us so that we can, in FY26, maintain the great service that we provide for Marylanders across the state.
Unfortunately, though, Katie, that's all we have time for in Living in Baltimore. I urge folks to go on your website, WLCMD.org, to make a donation. But that's all we have time for today. I want to thank our guest, Katie Curran O'Malley, who is Executive Director of the Women's Law Center of Maryland, for being our guest today. Thank you, Katie.
Thank you, Bill, and have a great Thanksgiving.
And to you, too. And to you, too, and your family.
Thank you.
Living in Baltimore, that's all we have time for today. I want to thank you for tuning in. Let's try to be a good neighbor out there in all of our neighborhoods, and we'll see you next time.